I got hairy legs that turn blonde in the sun.
Ew! Ew! Good morning and welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping that Tuesday so far is treating you well, wherever and whenever you may be listening. Thanks for joining the podcast today, whether you are live with me on Facebook Live or subscribing and receiving the podcast through your favorite podcast aggregator, whether that be Apple Music, Google, or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio. Five different ways to get the podcast. Glad you're there. Thanks for being there. And happy Tuesday to you. Oh my gosh, there's so much lunacy in this world today, and it really does make it difficult. Even if flipping a coin, it makes it difficult to decide what to talk about on days like today. For example, in the absurdity department, Michael Moore, the director, and classic example of lunacy and idiocy, is trying to save America from Iran by begging, by actually sending a direct message via social media to the head muckety-muck, the high muckety-mucks in Iran. Please, please don't hurt us. Give us 10 months, we'll get rid of Trump. And that's essentially what he said. Yeah, that's ridiculous. It's crazy. Rose McGowan. You remember her. She pointed fingers at Harvey Weinstein. She's also doing the same thing. Basically saying, hey, please don't hurt us. It's not us. It's the idiot in charge. And they both ignore facts. And we'll delve into those facts coming up on today's podcast. But here we have, once again, leftism and Hollywood being completely disconnected from reality and giving us fuel for our absurd section of the podcast. It's just the craziness just never stops. So, how was your day yesterday? Did you have a good day? Around our place, we had a pretty good day. My son Joe is in town for a visit. Post-Christmas, yesterday was his birthday. He managed to get in town, took an Amtrak in from New Orleans, which is the answer to how to make a 6-hour trip an 18-hour trip. Go Amtrak. Because it stops in every little bitty town, everywhere. You know, I got curious about traveling by train because I've seen a handful of people say, yeah, I'd like to do that. In fact, I was engineering the Dawson Now podcast a couple of weeks ago, and one of the interns, if you also listen to Dawson Now, you heard one of the interns say that one of her bucket list items was that she'd like to travel across country by Amtrak, go by train. And that's something I've looked into in the past, and as a result of that, I decided to go to YouTube and look at some videos and see what that's actually like. Because if you're going to travel cross-country, you sure don't want to do it in coach, because what you've got is a chair, basically. You have a seat. It's better than an airline seat. You know, your standard economy class airline seat, but it's still a seat, and if you're going to travel across the country, you'd kind of like to be able to lay down and go to sleep at some point, right? Which is hard to do on a train. So I started looking at the other options. They have a couple of different room options. One is called a roomette, which is, I think of that as, it's a room light. It also consists of a seat that folds flat so you can sleep on it, and a wall with a door in it. That's about it. You get basically what you get in coach with a wall and the ability to lay down. And then there's the other one, which is it's almost like a stateroom, but it's tiny, 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 tiny. It consists of, I think, two seats and your own restroom with a shower and a little space for your luggage. And that's about it. But you do have a place you can get away from it all and close the door. And it's extremely expensive. It's crazy expensive. I looked at it. It's over $1,000 per person to go cross country. That includes meals on the train, by the way. But from what I've observed, you might want to pack a couple of lunches. It's going to take you several days to cross the country because going by train is slow. You're at the mercy of their schedule and the freight lines' schedules. You end up having to wait because freight trains will be in your way, and they'll have to get those out of the way. You'll be stopping in every little town to put people off and put people on, a lot like going by bus, and then the food again. No offense to my listeners in the UK, but there was one guy who was doing an around the world thing, and he was traveling across America on trains, and he was raving about how great the food was. And I had also watched another one where some guy said, well, this meal was okay. Breakfast was practically inedible. And so there's a guy from here in the U.S. who can only eat about half the food, and there's the guy from the U.K. who thought it was great. And I thought, well, what does that say about the food in the U.K.? I've heard. At any rate, no, I don't think I'll be traveling across the country by train. That's one of those things that you would have to do intentionally. It's not a chosen means of transportation. Gee, I think I'll take the train to go to L.A. Really? Well, it's going to take you a lot longer than the 6 hours or so it would take you going cross-country with a plane. But, hey, you do you, okay? Because I sure wouldn't do that unless it's the only way to go. And if you look, if you search, if you plan in advance and buy tickets early, you can fly across country for less than you can go by train. And then there's the fact that Amtrak is constantly going in the red every year, and your tax dollars are paying for it in part. Yeah, it's just amazing. And the everything looks very old, everything I've seen. There aren't any new trains. They're all very, very old. Not my chosen method of transportation. But then, that's what I got out of looking at things. And so, Joe comes into town on the Amtrak, and it's, let's see, was supposed to be here at 2:15 yesterday. It was closer to 3 o'clock, because it's always late. Always late. And I'm downtown looking for parking. I'm trying to find some place where I can keep an eye on the entrance to the place. I'm not going to leave the vehicle down there because, well, I like my vehicle, so I'm not going to leave it parked anywhere unattended in that part of town. So it was a bizarre experience yesterday, but that was pretty much my day. And then, you know, dinner last night, and it was another layer of Christmas because there was a lot of gift unwrapping and celebrating. At any rate, that was pretty much our day yesterday. And then now we look at today, and I'm looking down my list of things to talk about. I've already mentioned Michael Moore and Rose McGowan. That's pretty much all I'm going to say about them. We don't need to go into any more detail about the idiocy that is leftism in the entertainment industry. What else do we have? Nancy Pelosi's trying to tie our president's hands with regard to Iran. There is somebody from the Obama administration, in fact, his DHS secretary, has said the Democrats are full of hot air with regard to President Trump needing their permission to do what he did with regard to Iran. A reporter at ABC goes all emotional. The media in general is upset with President Trump for killing Soleimani, and they're talking about all the emotional things that went on with the funeral. It's a crazy world we live in. It's just a crazy world. This guy, as I detailed yesterday on the podcast, this guy was personally responsible for the deaths of 600 members of our military. He has been behind terrorism around the world. He has been responsible for bloodshed in many, many places. And reasonable, rational people look at what happened and said, it was about time. And I also spelled out yesterday how President Trump sat on his hands, basically, as we watched things happen time and time and time again until Soleimani crossed the line and orchestrated an attack on a U.S. embassy, which is American soil. And then he said, okay, let's go get him. And that's basically what happened. We'll dig into more as we move forward in the podcast today. And there are things that I won't get to. I've had something in the list about Greta Thunberg for days. I really wish I could get to. I may include it in show notes today. By the way, if you're new to the podcast and you don't know about the show notes, and I was looking at stats over the weekend and noticed, because I haven't really looked at stats in a while, I don't do this, and it sounds odd, but I don't do this to garner a huge listenership, a huge audience. I do this because it's something I enjoy doing, and it's something that helps me to stay involved in what I enjoy doing, which is broadcasting, so to speak. So I look at stats every now and then, and over the weekend I looked at stats, and December was huge. It was a huge month for this podcast, in part, I believe, because of the Christmas perspective. And a lot of people were referred to the podcast because of the Christmas perspective, so we had a lot more people listening because those episodes were also distributed through the same channel this podcast is. And I want to welcome you aboard. If you came for the Christmas perspective and stuck around, it's good to have you here. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the fact that you're there. I'd like to hear from you. You can drop me a line at mark@dailyperspectivepodcast.com. It's easy enough. You just head into your email program and do that, and I'd like to hear from you and learn where you're from and why you're listening. Please do that today, mark@dailyperspectivepodcast.com. But the numbers have grown a lot, and if you've just joined, this is where I was going to begin with. I do a thing along with the podcast every day. As the podcast is released to the aggregators, the show notes are also released. So you get the links to all of the stories that I refer to throughout the podcast during that particular day. So today, the ones I've already mentioned, they'll be there as well. I'm going to release the link to the story about Greta Thunberg, because I think you need to read what Dennis Prager has written about her, as well as, let's see, what else is there? Oh, there's some news on Jeffrey Epstein. That's all getting shuffled to one side because of what's happening in Iran, and we probably won't get to that today, but I think you need to see the news about Jeffrey Epstein as well. So I'll include that in today's show notes as well, so you can go check out that article. And the reason that this is important is because the articles also contain links that I don't delve into. They are links to sources, links to substantiation and the like, that are the groundwork, the foundation for what's in the articles that we talk about. And it's important for you to go explore those other links and to see what is supporting the articles themselves. That way you're better informed. It's not just social media with your Aunt Sue saying, well, so-and-so is evil because they did this. You actually will know why something is evil if you actually do a little further digging. And that's extremely important. I talk about here often, I talk about being honest with ourselves and being honest with the people around us and being honest about life. And part of that is being honest about the source of the information that we base our opinions on. And if we're just basing our opinions on what our friends are telling us or what like-minded people are telling us on social media, which is where everybody lives today, then we're not fully informed. And if you only get your information from the evening news and who or where the evening news broadcasts source their information from, you're also not getting all of the information. As I've told you before, I've spent time with friends and family, and when it comes time for the news, it's just part of the habit. The remote control gets picked up and one of the network news channels comes on, and that's where they get their information. And if they go beyond that, they go to the sources quoted by the evening news, and they don't dig any deeper than that, which is why I say it's important for you to check my show notes every day, to follow the sources, to look around, to get all the information you can, so you know what you're talking about when someone comes to you and tells you that Orange Man is bad. And if you ask them why, they can't do anything but quote or send you links to articles from leftist sources because it's all they have. So you have to have more than that. So check show notes today for information about Greta Thunberg and Jeffrey Epstein and all the stories we'll be talking about during today's podcast, okay? All right. And the show notes come out, let's see, they hit the website. What's that word? It's website. It's dailyperspectivepodcast.com. I either need more coffee or less, one of the two. I'm either under-caffeinated or over-caffeinated, or just distracted, because I can hear the dog barking. I know you can't hear the dog barking in the background, but I can, and it's driving me crazy. I got to go find out what the dog's barking about. Oh, well. More after the break when this edition of the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. You're there. That's a good arrangement.
Would you like to buy a bowel?
No, I'm fine. Thank you. It's the Tuesday edition of the podcast. Recording Tuesday, January 7th, 2020. And on Facebook Live. I was looking at Facebook Live yesterday. I had a little trouble getting connected. Getting everything fired up and connected to Facebook yesterday morning. Everything was just kind of dragging and moving very slow. It's like all the connections were having to swim through a sea of molasses to get there. And so I'm scrambling. Click, 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 click. Go, 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 go. Because I like to get things up and running a few minutes before. This is why we have a little music running beforehand. And then at the top of the hour, everything goes hot, goes live. And I realized about halfway into it that I actually wasn't on the Daily Perspective page. I was on my personal page. So, apologies to those of you who've been following on Facebook Live yesterday. It was on Facebook. It just wasn't on the right place. At any rate, that's what the podcast is for. Always download the podcast. You'll hear things better in the podcast version anyway. And you won't be distracted by social media posts and other things popping up in the middle of things because you don't have that in front of you. Right? Right. Okay. Oh, my gosh. I was talking about earlier what Nancy Pelosi is up to, and I think we need to pay very close attention to what the leftists in our government are trying to do. I don't know if you've noticed this and put two and two together, but they're condemning President Trump for what he did, and they're showing sympathy for Iran. They're actually siding with terrorists. They're aligning themselves with terrorists. Instead of our own country and our own national security. It's just breathtakingly horrible what they're doing. Well, House Speaker, coming to us from PJ Media, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi sent a letter to fellow Democrats announcing a forthcoming resolution to tie President Donald Trump's hands on Iran. President Pelosi argued that the airstrike against the late Quds Force leader Qasem Soleimani was a disproportionate response to the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. Representatives Ilhan Omar and Barbara Lee announced a similar resolution on Sunday, but it seems Pelosi was announcing a separate effort. Pelosi's letter began, "Last week, the Trump administration conducted a provocative and disproportionate military airstrike targeting high-level Iranian military officials. This action endangered our service members, diplomats, and others by risking a serious escalation of tensions with Iran. As members of Congress, our first responsibility is to keep the American people safe. For this reason, we are concerned that the administration took this action without the consultation of Congress and without respect for Congress's war powers granted to it by the Constitution. This week, the House will introduce and vote on a war powers resolution to limit the president's military actions regarding Iran. This resolution is similar to the resolution introduced by Senator Tim Kaine in the Senate. It reasserts Congress's long-established oversight responsibilities by mandating that if no further congressional action is taken, the administration's military hostilities with Iran, with regard to Iran, cease within 30 days. Pelosi's designated Congresswoman Elissa Slotkin, a Democrat from Michigan, a former CIA and Department of Defense analyst specializing in Shia militias, is to lead this effort. Omar and Lee, already drafted a resolution to accompany this resolution authored by Senator Tim Kaine, the Democrat from Virginia in the Senate. Omar said in a statement, let's not mince words. The assassination of Qasem Soleimani was an act of war undertaken without congressional authorization in violation of the Constitution of the United States of America. Following the assassination, thousands of additional troops were sent to the Middle East in one of the largest rapid deployments seen in decades. This follows years of saber-rattling and threats of war against Iran by President Trump and his accomplices. We in Congress must exercise our constitutional duty and do everything in our power to stop another disastrous war. It wasn't was not an assassination. And Ilhan Omar is an anti-Semite, anti-Israel, extreme radical leftist who has stood for anti-American values since she has become noticed in the public eye. And she's politically trying to strike while the iron is hot. And she's making accusations here which cannot be supported in reality. And she's ignoring the fact that Iran is the world's leading sponsor of terrorism. And that Soleimani was personally responsible for the deaths of 600 military U.S. military personnel in the region. And that when he was personally involved in the planning and authorization of the attack on the U.S. embassy, he crossed a line. And finally, we have a president with the strength to do something about it. After 8 years of the fundamental transformation of the United States of America into a weak leftist socialist nation, we have a president who will stand up to the bullies and deal with them as they should be dealt with, rather than placating them by giving them what they want so that they won't be nasty anymore. And you and I both know, as honest people, that that's not how you deal with someone like that. You don't placate bullies because they continue to be bullies, and it takes more and more and more to make them behave. And eventually, they just do whatever they want to and get away with whatever they want to because you're afraid of them and you won't confront them. The only way to deal with a bully, as my dad told me, is to punch hard, draw blood, and make them think twice about doing that to you again. And that's exactly what Donald Trump has done. Representative Don Bacon, Republican of Nebraska, tweeted, Speaker Pelosi says the Soleimani operation was disproportionate. Apparently, the murder of 608 Americans in Iraq, recent direct rocket attacks on U.S. bases, and an embassy attack isn't enough for her. It was right for President Trump to defend America. Senator Ted Cruz shared an article by former Senator Joe Lieberman, the Democrat of Connecticut, defending Trump's order to take out Soleimani as morally, constitutionally, and strategically correct and deserving of more bipartisan support than the begrudging or negative reactions it has received thus far from my fellow Democrats. The claim by some Democrats that Mr. Trump had no authority to order this attack without congressional approval is constitutionally untenable and practically senseless. Authority to act quickly to eliminate a threat to the U.S. is inherent in the powers granted to the president by the Constitution. It defies common sense to argue that the president must notify Congress or begin a formal process of authorization before acting on an imminent threat. He's absolutely right. And given the atmosphere, the climate in America today with the people who are in Congress, had he notified Congress, they would have notified Soleimani. Certain people, Adam Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, Ilhan Omar, would have notified Iran that something was up. And if you doubt me, just look at what's been happening with John Kerry over the past couple of years, who has been meeting with Iran, who has been telling them to ignore American sanctions, who has been telling them he He's been over there encouraging them, patting them on the back. Hey, it's okay, buddy. We got your back. He is just one example. More from Lieberman. In another time, this would have been a just cause for an American war against Iran, and certainly for trying to eliminate Soleimani. With Iran, the Quds Force has worked with the Supreme Leader to suppress freedom and economic opportunity, jail dissident politicians and journalists, and kill protesters in the street. On many occasions, President Obama sensibly ordered drone strikes on dangerous terrorist leaders, including U.S.-born Anwar al-Awlaki, the former senator notes. He did so without specific congressional authorization and without significant Democratic opposition. Mr. Obama also brought justice to Osama bin Laden without prior explicit congressional approval. Remember, as we discussed yesterday, Obama authorized over 2,800 military strikes against these people during his administration. 2,800 without congressional consent or approval. President Trump bides his time, waits patiently, and when Iran crosses the line and strikes American soil, the U.S. Embassy, he authorizes a strike on the person behind it. And the Democrats lose their minds. It's all political, every last bit of it. It's important to remember that. It's all political. We'll have more after the break when the Daily Perspective continues.
You're a big, fat, bumbling, oblivious, pepe-wearing mega-idiot.
Ooh, what did I do? Welcome back to the Daily Perspective, the Tuesday edition, January 7th, 2020. I hope you are well and all is well with you. I was referring back to the Obama administration earlier. And from TheBlaze.com, Jay Johnson, the one-time Homeland Security Secretary in the Obama administration, debunked Democrats' claims that President Donald Trump needed congressional approval before authorizing the airstrike that killed top Iranian military commander Major General Qasem Soleimani. Quote, if you believe everything that our government is saying about General Soleimani, he was a lawful military objective. And the president, under his constitutional authority as commander-in-chief, had ample domestic legal authority to take him out without an additional congressional authorization. He said this Sunday on Meet the Press. He goes on to say whether he was a terrorist or a general in a military force that was engaged in armed attacks against our people, he was a lawful military objective. Almost immediately after the Soleimani strike last week, congressional Democrats, like Chris Murphy, the Democrat from Connecticut, for example, complained that Trump did not first seek congressional approval before ordering the strike. He tweeted, Soleimani was an enemy of the United States. That's not a question. The question is this. As reports suggest, did America just assassinate, without any congressional authorization, the second most powerful person in Iran, knowingly setting off a potential massive regional war? However, as Johnson suggested, the U.S. government, including Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, have said Soleimani, as Iran's chief terrorism architect, was planning imminent attacks on U.S. interests in the Middle East. After Soleimani's death, the Defense Department released a statement saying the strike was aimed at deterring future Iranian attack plans. And here is that statement. General Soleimani was actively developing plans to attack American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. General Soleimani and his Quds force were responsible for the deaths of hundreds of Americans and coalition service members and the wounding of thousands more. He had orchestrated attacks on coalition bases in Iraq over the last several months, including the attack on December 27th, culminating in the death and wounding of additional American and Iraqi personnel. General Soleimani also approved the attacks on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad that took place this week. For his part, President Trump published a tweet declaring it is his notice to Congress that if Iran retaliates for the Soleimani strike, he will authorize a powerful response by the U.S. military. His tweet says, "These media posts will serve as notification to the United States Congress that should Iran strike any U.S. person or target, the United States will quickly and fully strike back, and perhaps in a disproportionate manner. Such legal notice is not required, but it is given nevertheless." So President Trump says, yeah, if they do anything, we're going to hit them back, and it's probably going to be disproportional. Disproportionate. In other words, if somebody tries any hanky-panky, any funny business in Iran, if Iran tries to hurt anybody, again, any American or any American resource, it doesn't matter what they do. What happens in return will be swift, and it will be shockingly huge. It will be incredible. And it is intended to send a message. Don't pick a fight with the bear. Don't poke the bear. That's what's going on here. They're bragging a lot about how they can strike out at all these different targets. But they're going to find out that if they do, little by little, Iran's leadership is going to disappear in puffs of smoke and loud explosions. Let's go back a little ways and take a look at the history, a little bit of the history of our relationship with Iran. The Obama administration, this is a story, by the way, coming from Business Insider. The Obama administration secretly sought to give Iran access, although briefly, to the U.S. financial system by sidestepping sanctions kept in place after the 2015 nuclear deal, despite repeatedly telling Congress and the public it had no plans to do so. Yes, the translation of that is the Obama administration in secret sought to do something for Iran which was illegal and lied to everyone it had to in the process in order to get that done. An investigation by Senate Republicans released Wednesday sheds light on the delicate balance the Obama administration sought to strike after the deal, as it worked to ensure Iran received its promised benefits without playing into the hands of the deal's opponents. Amid a tense political climate, Iran hawks in the U.S., Israel, and elsewhere argued that the United States was giving far too much to Tehran, and that the windfall would be used to fund extremism and other troubling Iranian activity. I want you to keep that in mind whenever you think about the pallets of cash that Obama had sent to Iran. Remember that? The report by the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations revealed that under President Barack Obama, the Treasury Department issued a license in February 2016, never previously disclosed, that would have allowed Iran to convert $5.7 billion, that's with a B, billion it held at a bank in Oman, from Omani rials into euros by first exchanging them into U.S. dollars. If the Omani bank had allowed that exchange without such a license, it would have violated sanctions that bar Iran from transactions that touch the U.S. financial system. The effort was unsuccessful, because American banks, themselves afraid of running afoul of U.S. sanctions, declined to participate. So even though Obama was pressuring people, the banks knew the law, and they wouldn't break it. The Obama administration approached two U.S. banks to facilitate the conversion, according to the report, but both of them refused, citing the reputational risk of doing business with or for Iran. Senator Robert Portman, a Republican of Ohio, the subcommittee's chairman, said the Obama administration misled the American people and Congress because they were desperate to get a deal with Iran. Issuing the license was not illegal. Still, it went above and beyond what the Obama administration was required to do under the terms of the nuclear agreement. Under that deal, the U.S. and world powers gave Iran billions of dollars in sanctions relief in exchange for curbing its nuclear program. Last month, President Donald Trump declared the U.S. was pulling out of what he described as a disastrous deal. It was disastrous because the entire time we knew from intelligence reports that Iran was saying they had reduced or terminated their nuclear work, but it was still going on. We knew from reports that they were still developing nuclear weapons. We knew it was going on the whole time. It was a disastrous deal. The license issued to Bank Muscat stood in stark contrast to repeated public statements from the Obama White House, the Treasury, and the State Department, all of which denied that the administration was contemplating allowing Iran access to the U.S. financial system. Shortly after the nuclear deal was sealed in July of 2015, then Treasury Secretary Jack Lew testified that even with the sanctions relief, Iran will continue to be denied access to the world's largest financial and commercial market. A month later, one of Lew's top deputies, Adam Zubin, testified that despite the nuclear deal, quote, Iran will be denied access to the world's most important market and unable to deal in the world's most important currency. Yet, almost immediately after the sanctions relief took effect in January of 2016, Iran began to complain that it wasn't reaping the benefits it had envisioned. Iran argued that other sanctions, such as those linked to human rights, terrorism, and missile development, were scaring off potential investors and banks who feared any business with Iran would lead to punishment. The global financial system is heavily intertwined with U.S. banks, making it nearly impossible to conduct many international transactions without touching New York in one way or another. Former Obama administration officials declined to comment for the record. However, they said the decision to grant the license had been made in line with the spirit of the deal, which included allowing Iran to regain access to foreign reserves that had been off limits because of the sanctions. They said public comments made by the Obama administration at the time were intended to dispel incorrect reports about non-existent proposals that would have gone much further by letting Iran actually buy or sell things in dollars. The former officials spoke on condition of anonymity because many are still involved in national security issues. So, there's more to the story, but not a lot more time in this particular segment. The Obama administration lied to America, lied to the Congress, lied to everybody that they could find to lie to. And they tried to arrange a deal so that Iran could exchange currency going through our banks and convert that currency to euros in direct violation of law. This is something to remember when you hear your liberal leftist friends, progressives, talk about lawlessness with regard to the Trump administration. This is just one example of lawlessness committed by the Obama administration. There are many, many more. And this particular example of lawlessness, of disregard for the law, involves helping a state which is recognized as the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. They wanted to help terrorists, just like Ilhan Omar does today. The Obama administration did openly then.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy
than Washington, D.C., or possibly the U.N. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there. Diving into the final segment of this Tuesday podcast. I'm skipping around a bit here, so I wanted to bump down my list to a story that I think we need to deal with before the end of this particular podcast. And it comes from thefreebeacon.com. It's a column by Matthew Continetti, which he wrote actually about 5 days ago. It's called Trump Calls the Ayatollah's Bluff. The successful operation against Qasem Soleimani, head of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, is a stunning blow to the international terrorism and reassertion of American might. It will also test President Trump's Iran strategy. It is now Trump, not Ayatollah Khomeini, who has ascended to a rung on the ladder of escalation by killing the military architect of Iran's Shiite empire. For years, Iran has set the rules. It was Iran that picked the time and place of confrontation. No more. Reciprocity has been the key to understanding Donald Trump. Whether you are a media figure or a mullah, a prime minister or a pope, he will be good to you if you are good to him. Say something mean, though, or work against his interests, and he will respond in force. It won't be pretty. It won't be polite. There will be fallout. But you may think twice before crossing him again. That has been the case with Iran. President Trump has conditioned his policies on Iranian behavior. When Iran spread its malign influence, Trump acted to check it. When Iran struck, Trump hit back. Never disproportionately, never definitively. He left open the possibility of negotiations. He doesn't want to have the greater Middle East, whether Libya, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Yemen, or Afghanistan, dominate his presidency the way it dominated those of Barack Obama and George W. Bush. America no longer needs Middle Eastern oil. Best keep the region on the back burner. Watch it so it doesn't boil over. Do not overcommit resources to this underdeveloped, war-torn, sectarian land. The result was reciprocal antagonism. In 2018, Trump withdrew the United States from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action negotiated by his predecessor. He began jacking up sanctions. The Iranian economy turned into shambles. This maximum pressure campaign of economic warfare deprived the Iranian war machine of revenue and drove a wedge between the Iranian public and the Iranian government. Trump offered the opportunity to negotiate a new agreement. Iran refused and began to lash out. Last June, Iran's fingerprints were all over two oil tankers that exploded in the Persian Gulf. Trump tightened the screws. Iran downed a U.S. drone. Trump called off a military strike at the last minute and responded indirectly with more sanctions, cyber attacks, and additional troop deployments to the region. Last September, a drone fleet launched by Iranian proxies in Yemen devastated the Aramco oil facility in Abqaiq, Saudi Arabia. Trump responded as he had to previous incidents, nonviolently. Iran slowly brought the region to a boil. First, it hit boats, then drones, then the key infrastructure of a critical ally. On December 27th, it went further. Members of the Kataib Hezbollah militia launched rockets at a U.S. installation near Kirkuk in Iraq. Four U.S. soldiers were wounded. An American contractor was killed. Destroying physical objects merited economic sanctions and cyber intrusions. Ending lives required a lethal response. It arrived on December 29th when F-15s pounded five Kataib Hezbollah facilities across Iraq and Syria. At least 25 militiamen were killed. Then, when Kataib Hezbollah and other Iran-backed militias organized a mob to storm the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, setting fire to the grounds, America made a show of force and threatened severe reprisals. The angry crowd melted away. The risk to the U.S. Embassy and the possibility of another Benghazi must have angered Trump. Secretary of Defense Esper said hours before the assassination of Soleimani at Baghdad Airport, "The game has changed." Indeed, it has. The decades-long gray zone conflict between Iran and the United States manifested itself into subterfuge, terrorism, technological combat, financial chicanery, and proxy forces. Throughout it all, the two sides confronted each other directly only once, in the second half of Ronald Reagan's presidency. That is about to change. Deterrence, says Fred Kagan of the American Enterprise Institute, is credibly holding at risk something your adversary holds dear. If the reports out of Iraq are true, President Trump has put at risk the entirety of the Iranian imperial enterprise, even as his maximum pressure campaign strangles the Iranian economy and fosters domestic unrest. That will get the Ayatollah's attention. And now the United States must prepare for his answer. The bombs over Baghdad? That was Trump calling Khamenei's bluff. The game has changed, but it isn't over. And I hope that kind of spells out what has actually happened here. It's an important article from the Washington Free Beacon, freebeacon.com. It's in today's show notes. Make sure you get the show notes, as I mentioned earlier. And look at the stories. There's some recent story links in there, too. How Trump calls the Ayatollah's bluff, how Trump won in 2019, present at the demolition. There's some good articles attached to this one as well. And you need to know more about this about what happened, what really happened. The process, not just the hyperbole that's being spewed by the Democrats and people in the entertainment industry today. You need to know what's really been going on. There has been a progressive increase in activity. Iran has been ignoring sanctions. They have been doing what they continued to create nuclear weapons and to build their nuclear program the whole time, lying to the whole world about what they were doing. And we had intelligence saying that they were doing exactly what they were not supposed to be doing. They've been sponsoring terrorism. They've been lashing out, a lot like a toddler when you tell them, no, you can't do that. And the toddler pitches a fit and then breaks something. That's what Iran has been doing. That actually might be a good way to imagine them. Toddlers with nuclear weapons. Angry toddlers building nuclear weapons. When you think about them that way, it becomes easier to understand why they must be dealt with decisively. It's more obvious why we have to draw firm lines and not allow them to be crossed. Because in their anger, they're going to hurt a lot of people. We're talking about a regime, a people led by religious extremists who firmly believe that they are supposed to rule the entire world, that they're supposed to take over everything, and everyone who doesn't submit must die. And I know there are people who will say that's not true, and those people are woefully un- and misinformed. You should study what Muhammad actually taught his people. And you should study what Muhammad actually did. They will lie to the world, and it's completely and totally approved by their religion. And they will destroy the parts of the world that will not submit and conform. They are driven by this passion. And they don't care what anybody else says or does. It's all about them ruling the world. And they have to be put in place. It has to stop. If it doesn't stop, then we're in real danger. And now, it's time to go. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.